Someone who has experienced trauma also has gifts to offer all of us in their depth, their knowledge of our universal vulnerability, and their experience of the power of compassion. Sharon Salzberg. Trigger warnings for today's episode are the words vomit and sick. There are no stories, no gory details, nothing like that. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 25 of Emetophobia Help. I'm Anna Christie from Vancouver, Canada, recovered emetophobic licensed psychotherapist specializing in emetophobia and your host for this podcast. Today, my guest is Melinda, who is from Albany, New York. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, Anna.
How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm always good on podcast recording days. It's so much fun. But it's great to see you and hear you. Everybody else can only hear you, but I always appreciate seeing my guests. Let's start off with, we're going to kind of talk about your parents and your family life. But why don't we just start off by having you talk about your emetophobia and when you think it started and how that journey has gone for you.
Okay, sure. So I don't really know when my emetophobia began because it goes back as far as my memory goes. I don't ever remember having a time when I did not have this phobia. And I would say my earliest memories go back to about 3. And they usually involve emetophobia, I think, because, you know, the fear is so strong that it makes the memories last. And so I grew up, I had a very nice family, you know, my mom, my dad, I had older siblings. When I was born, they were 10, 12, and 14. And
wow.
Yeah, I was the youngest. And when I was young, my parents got sick frequently. My mom experienced cluster headaches, which is a type of migraine headache that usually involves vomiting. And the sound of that was very frightening to me.
Right.
And I grew up in a small house. And so my bedroom was directly across the hallway from my parents' bedroom and also the bathroom door. And so I was closest of all of the people in the family to that particular sound. Mm-hmm. And when that would happen, I would be so frightened that I would get up out of my bed and run to my closet. I would hide in my closet in this giant pile of stuffed animals. I'd close the door, wrap myself up in a blanket, and put my fingers in my ears.
Oh, wow.
And I would stay there for hours. And when I was young, I used to have a lot of problems with my ears and earaches. And my parents could never figure out why. And as an adult now, I wonder if, yeah, maybe having my fingers stuffed in my ears so much contributed
well,
to that.
I'm sure that didn't help. Yeah.
Yes.
Hard to know, yes. But yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And so hours, and your mom was your mom actually sick for hours at a time or?
I would think not continuously, no. But when those headaches came, they generally lasted for several hours, during which she would get sick repeatedly. I don't really know what the interval was because I would keep my fingers in my ears to block any sound whatsoever.
Wow. That is such a profound story. You know, I mean, if you just picture it in your head as you're telling it, not only are you scared of this terrible sound, but this is your mom and little kids, you know, they're so attached to their moms, right?
Yes.
You don't want to lose your mom for sure. I'm sure it sounded just like she was dying, even though she wasn't. Mm-hmm. And here you are, little tiny kid. I mean, my youngest grandchild is 3. She's so helpless and little. And You know, I can't even imagine her being in a closet for hours on end, let alone, you know, hiding and scared and with her fingers in her ears. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. I was very attached to my parents, too. You know, even as an adult, I still am. And so when I would hear that, that was truly my thought. Oh, they're going to die. You know, how can somebody possibly live through that?
And,
and it was particularly loud. I know as an adult, when I have talked to my brothers and sisters about this, I didn't really tell anybody that I had this until I was maybe around 30. I think that my parents knew that I was unusually afraid of this, but back then we didn't have internet or Google to tell us that a emetophobia existed. Mm-hmm. So I think I was probably in my late 20s before I realized that this actually has a name. It's emetophobia, and that I was not the only strange person in the world who had this terrifying fear.
Right.
And, you know, when I talked to my brother about this, he said, well, I can see how this might have happened because I was very puzzled. You know, there are four kids in our family. We grew up in the same home, the same parents, the same situations, other than I was younger. And they had mostly moved out while I was growing up. But he said, well, I can see why you were afraid because both of our parents are particularly loud when they're vomiting. And you were right there at ground zero. And
you know, yeah.
we were in our rooms at the other end of the house, and we were laughing, thinking that it was funny. And you were by yourself in your room right there. And none of us knew that you were terrified, hiding in your closet, thinking that the world was going to end.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And some kids would be right kind of there in the sense of, you know, asking their mom what's wrong and I'm scared and all sorts. But a lot of kids actually are more like what you're describing. Like a lot of kids are more hide somewhere and be terrified because you don't want to, almost don't want to know the answer to the question of what's happening and why is it happening and, you know, are you okay? So they had no chance to, or your mom we're talking about here, had no chance to like reassure you or anything like that. Plus the loud people. I have this discussion with a lot of my clients as we're watching or listening to sounds or watching videos, which comes at the end of a treatment program, not near the beginning, but that usually women aren't loud. Men are loud. Men are incredibly loud. And we joke that it's like a man cold, that they exaggerate and they moan and whine and vomit at the same time. And it sounds way worse. But yeah, there are some women, of course, who you know, may, and plus your mom was in pain in the first place. Yeah, I get some pretty bad migraine headaches, but and sometimes I'll get a bit nauseous, but not normally. Probably because of emetophobics. I've never heard of an emetophobic person vomiting for a headache. I mean, because we don't take that light. We don't just vomit for any old reason. Put it that way.
Yes.
We're going to make sure that we're good and sick, or good and poisoned before we're going to be sick. Yeah. Wow. Plus that whole idea that they're dying, you know. I had a client, I've probably said this on my podcast before, but hey, I'm in my 60s, so everybody give me a break if I repeat a story. but I had a client, a young dental student, and she was terrified of the sound. And once we got doing the exposure, it's like a light bulb came on for her. And she said to me, she just looked at me, she said, it sounds way worse than it is, doesn't it? And it was just this moment for her when she really realized that down deep. Like, it sounds like something horrible, catastrophic, awful, terrifying, dying. It sounds like that, but it's not. It, you know, it's really not. Nothing's bad is happening. It's not bad at all. So that was, you were three. What happened? How'd your phobia kind of progress after that?
It remained all through childhood. There were a couple times when, you know, my mom wasn't feeling well after my siblings had gotten married and moved away and I was the only child left at home. She would call to me if she wasn't feeling well to ask me to maybe bring her something. And if I didn't know ahead of time that she was sick and I would walk into her room and see that, I would turn around and run away. Like run outside or run somewhere and hide. I wasn't even able to help her in any way. If my father was home, I would go and get him. Mm-hmm. Or if he was not home, there were a few times I would call one of my older siblings. Like I'd call my sister and say, you know, mom's really sick. Can you come help? And, you know, proof that this didn't bother my siblings the way it bothered mm-hmm. me. One of my sisters was a nurse, worked in a hospital, and didn't face her a mm-hmm. bit. And so, you know, throughout my childhood, I lived with a lot of fear of that. I was afraid of going to school some years because I would occasionally have one of those kids in my class that would get sick a lot. And I had a hard time sitting in class every day wondering, oh my goodness, is today the day that somebody in school is going to get sick? And am I close enough to the door of the classroom that I could run away if I had to? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I also had some trouble with food. I know I've heard some of your other clients, people in your podcast say that, where sometimes I would be just so anxious and just hypervigilant that I would not want to eat. And I was very, very particular about what I felt was a safe food and a not safe food. And so there were times when I really struggled with that, when my weight would be very low and I would have to work very hard to feel brave enough to eat. And during high school, it wasn't as bad because high school kids are a little more predictable than elementary school kids. You know, there weren't as many sick kids in high school. But when I went off to college, that was difficult because I had to live in a dorm. And there were a lot of kids who were partying, drinking, getting sick. And I am not a partier. I don't drink. I don't like being around drunk people. I have never been to a bar. That would be my worst nightmare. So in college, there were times when it got pretty bad just because I felt like I was in an environment that I could not control. And, you know, it was unpredictable. And after that, it was okay for a while until I got pregnant and had some morning sickness. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I wasn't actually vomiting because I would try very, very hard not to, you know.
Right.
And I stopped eating and I ended up, I passed out at work one day because I had not eaten. And so, you know, my coworker took me to the doctor and I ended up, they gave me prescription antiemetics, which, those are wonderful.
There are some really good ones out there now. My daughter had them. Yeah.
That has become one of my safety behaviors. You know, I always have a prescription on standby and I hardly ever need it, but just having it there, you know, if I did have nausea. And so when my children were born, when my son was a baby, he was about 11 months old the first time he actually vomited, you know, beyond the typical baby spitting up. They're very different incidents. And that was terrifying. And luckily, my husband was there. He doesn't have a problem with it at all.
Yeah. Right.
And so
we all know how to pick partners, don't we?
Yes.
Just on a first date, like, do we all go, how do you feel about vomit? And then, because nobody has a partner who has the same problem. No, if you're out there, then, you know. That's fine.
That was a conversation we had, you know, around when it was time to, sure. you know, will you marry me? Well, here's the deal. I have a hard time taking care of people with vomit. So if we had kids, would you be able to handle that? Right. Oh, yeah, I can handle that. No problem. Okay, good.
Yeah.
You know, so
of course, they're not always around, though, are they?
They're not. And you know, that was when I really sought help for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I did some hypnotherapy, and it was helpful to a certain extent. It got me to the place where I wouldn't run out of the house if something happened, you know, if one of my children happened to get sick. But I still had the same fear response, you know, the panic, the shaking, the racing heart, just being very afraid.
Yeah.
And I had one therapist who was very, very bad. She had no compassion for it. Oh. And, you know, she said, well, the way that we get over this is we keep talking about it. And so she would have me come to therapy and tell her my most traumatizing stories.
Okay.
And that was dreadful because I reached a point where I would sit in the waiting room and I would start shaking because I knew that she was going to make me tell this over and over and over again. It was like carrying around a big trash bag with my worst memories and having to open it up and look into it once a week.
Yeah.
And it was not helpful. It almost reinforced it.
Oh,
no,
dear.
It reinforced it. And eventually she said that I was non-compliant.
Oh,
and put too much pressure
on her. That makes me so mad. That makes me so mad. Oh, everybody knows if they listen to my podcast, that happened to me so many times or they'd write my doctor a letter. Jeez. I would use swear words, but Apple Podcasts puts you in a different category if you do that. So I'm going to be good, but I really would like to use an F word and a few other choice. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And you paid for it too, eh? You paid for it. Yeah, there's my Canadian just slips right out there. But that's really too bad that you paid for that. Wow. Have you had any other treatment or help since then?
I have done a couple of things. So I ended up learning how to do EFT tapping, which is the meridian tapping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I learned everything I could when I realized that emetophobia was a thing and that I was not unusual. That's when I really started to learn about the brain, the amygdala, the HPA axis, the physical response that happens in the body. And so I learned how to do EFT tapping, and I actually became a certified practitioner of that and have helped other people. And I found that that does help bring down the stress response in my body, but it wasn't the magic bullet for me, you know.
Like no, it isn't. Yes, no. I understand. Yeah.
If I'm watching TV and I see that happen, I can bring myself down.
Right.
But if one of my children is sick or, you know, somebody next to me, I am not able to comment with that alone. And, you know, even though I tell myself, okay, I don't have to be scared of this. This is not physically harmful in any way. It's just a response in the body. Mm-hmm. I still have that same reaction.
Of course.
Of course. And I also, I learned Reiki. I am a Reiki master and I have done that for myself. And again, that helps as well. You know, I'm generally a high, strung, anxious kind of person.
Yeah. And we all are. That's what, you know, that's one thing we all have in common. So whether we get over the phobia or not, that remains. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I do work on that. You know, I do daily meditations. I do Reiki on myself. Mm-hmm. I use EFT. I use other techniques. But, you know, it's enough to help me be less anxious in general, but it still hasn't gotten rid of the phobia. And I have tried using the self-help section on your website with, you know, the sounds and the pictures.
It's so incomplete. It's very incomplete. Yeah.
It is helpful, but I wasn't able to handle it myself. And so I right. did find a therapist a couple years ago who was helping me work through it. And I'm not very good at this point of getting that stress response in my body down. You know, one of the phrases I heard you use once was you have to train like an Olympian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think I didn't quite get there because just the exposure therapy, it felt traumatic to me still. Mm-hmm. And okay. The therapist that I had at the time, she was pretty good. And I had to stop, though, because my father got sick. He had pancreatic cancer and he had to have a major surgery. And so I went to stay with my parents for quite a while. And I was away from my therapist, so I stopped going. But that was very challenging. I felt like, okay, here's a real life test, you know.
Yes,
I had to
exactly.
go into hospitals, which are things uh-huh. that I am afraid of. And right. I had to be around yeah. sick people. Right. And so I did better than mm-hmm. you would imagine a person with emetophobia would do. But good, I still, good. You know, I still had my moments where I struggled and, you know, yeah. I was shaking and such. And so that's where I am now. I know I really would benefit from finding another therapist who, I think it would be helpful to find one who is definitely experienced in treating this and the process yeah. of exposure therapy. So,
yes. yeah. And yeah. If there are any therapists out there in the state of New York listening, please send me an email. The email address is I'm not even going to edit that out. A little comic relief there. Okay, here's the address. anna@emetophobiahelp.org. Or go to my website and find the form to fill out for therapists. I just met a great therapist in New York City on Friday. But he and his group are for children, pediatrics, so 18 and below, which is mm-hmm. thrilling too. But New York is such a huge population. And where are all the emetophobia therapists? I don't know. In the meantime, I'm going to plug something. I'm going to show it to you, but I can only say it to other people. This book has just come out. It is called The Emetophobia Manual by Ken Goodman. And I just had a lovely long chat with Ken on the phone yesterday or the day before. This is a self-help book. Ken is very experienced with emetophobia. He has a particular way of addressing it. But basically, this is the evidence-based CBT ERP, which is exposure and response prevention. And the great thing is you can pick up this book and inside, instead of any nasty pictures or anything, there are just these barcodes. And you just scan the barcode with your phone and it goes to his website and then you can open the picture. So that's really cool because I know a lot of people are afraid to even pick up a book at the bookstore. Actually, this is published by and available only, I believe, he'll kill me if it's not only, but it is available on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, and probably in the UK as well. So I would highly recommend for you in particular, it may not be everyone's cup of tea. If you get easily triggered by words, it can be difficult to get it started, to start this book. But so you'd be better off to go to my website, go to the resources menu, go to the dropdown where it says exposure and do level one, which is just to looking at the words and getting used to the words, maybe write them out a few times or say them out loud. Then you can get into Ken's book. Another question I had for you is how are you with food now?
Right now, I'm okay with food.
Okay.
I worked very hard to come to that place mm-hmm. where I'm okay with mm-hmm. food. there still is food that I wouldn't eat under any circumstances. You know, sushi.
Aww, I'm so sad for you. Then again, I live right on the ocean, as in Albany. It's not exactly a sushi capital of the world.
So. Right, right. So there are foods that I just would not eat. But right now, I'm a healthy weight. I'm okay for the most part with eating. It took a lot of work to get there. One of the problems I think with having emetophobia as a mom, you know, in addition to wanting to take care of your children when they're ill, but not necessarily being able to, is I didn't want my children to learn this behavior from me. And, you know, that definitely happened with my oldest child, my son.
Okay.
And I have found that he is not as bad as he used to be. But for a while, he really struggled a lot. And I took him to somebody that helped him with that. And so, you know,
he's better now. He's 20.
Mm-hmm. He's 20, yep. And he is, I think that he certainly doesn't love it, of course. Nobody does.
Right.
But he doesn't seem to be as upset if, say, he's watching a movie and there's a scene.
Yes.
Or, you know, I don't think he would be first in line to be present with somebody if they, say, caught norovirus. You know, he wouldn't want to be involved in that. But so that is one thing I think that is common for moms. You know, you feel like a bad mom if you see your kids are sick and you can't take care of them the way they want to, and they, you know, you don't want them to learn this behavior as well. Yeah. Because if a small child sees that mom is scared, well, then I should be scared too, because, you know, mom takes care of everything. So if something is serious enough for mom to be scared, I need to be scared too.
And we were just—I just had a lovely lady on 2 weeks ago, and actually the title of the podcast is something like "I think I'm a bad mom," and then I wrote, "I don't think you are," but we were talking about that, and one of the things that's really important with children is that you cannot fake not being scared. You can try to fake not being scared. It's better than being hysterical, crying and screaming, of course, to just fake being calm. But you can't actually fake being calm to a child, because their cells vibrate on the same wavelength as you. Yeah. So it's really important to say to them, you know what, mommy is afraid of this, not because there's anything to be afraid of, but something happened to mommy when I was a little girl that made me afraid. And I'm working on it and trying to get better. You know, just that simple explanation will give the child a reference point for why mommy's cells are vibrating, you know, the way that they are. And but I mean, it doesn't sound like your son is lacking in life skills or anything like that. Yeah. You know, he's living his life. So that's really great. Melinda, it's been wonderful having you on. Your story is going to be a great inspiration to people, how you, despite the bad therapist and the not helpful kinds of therapy, you continued, you tried to learn things yourself. And then you did some CBT with someone. I mean, this is trauma based for you. It isn't for everyone. There are different contributing factors to the phobia with different people, but you're doing great. You look great. You're very beautiful and you look healthy, and so you've had a family, you've got a job. It's you've done really well in life, so I commend you for that.
Thank you.
So thank you to Melinda and to all of you who are listening and subscribing each week. This podcast, I know I've said it a few times, I don't think of it as mine. I think of it as belonging to the whole emetophobic community of people, because It's all of you that make it possible week after week. There are costs associated with producing the podcast. So if you'd like to make a, you don't even have to make a donation. You just have to buy me a coffee. It's kind of this cool, it's a gimmicky thing, but you can go to the notes on the podcast, scroll down, you'll see the link there. Buy me a coffee for a couple of bucks, a couple of pounds. If you're in the UK, and mainly, I encourage you to go to my website at emetophobiahelp.org, where you'll find a lot of information, whether you are an emetophobic person or a therapist wanting to treat emetophobia. There are no ads. There is no sign up. Therapists can just go there for free and use all of the resources on the website. So next week, I'm very excited to have Dr. David Russ and his business partner, Chris McCarthy, join me to talk about emetophobia and treating children, as well as their program that they have. I'll leave it for a surprise. So join us next week for that. Meanwhile, please stay safe. Get that vaccine if you possibly can. Wear a mask, social distance, 2 meters, whatever that is in American. 6 feet, yes, and wash your hands for 20 seconds. I'm preaching to the choir when I say that. I'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.